Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Om Vishnu Pad, Purumansa Paribrad, Vishnu Pad, Vishnu Pad, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Raj Prabhupad ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai. Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem Sakaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar. Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gokupinath. Sham Kun Radha Kun Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Tham ki jai. Navadip Tham ki jai. Jagannath Puri ki jai. Ganga Mai ki jai. Yamuna Mai ki jai. Tulsi Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande. Om Gana Timinatya Jananjana Shalakaya. Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah. Sri Chaitanya Manapistam Sthaptam Jena Purtade. Shayam Guru Pukada Maitam Jena Shabadam. So we're concluding today the incident of the concerning Ajamya. Yesterday there was a discussion between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas, in which the Vishnudutas emerged victorious, and Ajamya, his life spared, repented his sinful activities and very seriously went to Haridwar and engaged himself fully in the devotional service of the Lord, and was transferred at the time of his actual death to the spiritual world. So now, Parikshit Maharaj had been told previously that the Yamadutas had gone back to Yamaraj and reported to him their what had happened, their failure to arrest Ajamya, and their encounter with these very brilliant people, four-armed people who had stopped them. So Parikshit Maharaj asked, when they informed Yamaraj, what did Yamaraj reply? And he says, it's practically unthinkable that an order from Yamaraj could be baffled, so it seems like a very doubtful incident. So please explain what happened. So Sukadeva Goswami says, well, the Yamadutas came back and they approached their master to tell him what happened, that they'd been defeated and they were baffled. And they spoke to Yamaraj practically in a they were angry mood, the way Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur glosses it. It's like, you know, wait a second, we thought you were the boss and we were your guys, and then we went to do our work and somebody else from out of nowhere came and just cut us off. So what's going on here? What kind of deal is this? They were disappointed, and it was almost in anger. They asked him, well, you know, how many people are in charge here? We thought you were completely in charge. And, you know, we signed up because you're in charge. We thought we were working for you, and you're the top guy. And then we're out there in the field, and some other guys come and say, you know, nothing doing. So how many controllers are there for awarding the results of material activities, and especially sinful activities? And it's mentioned here that if a servant can't carry out the order of his master without being defeated, what's the use of serving such a powerless master? Who wants to work for, you know, a king who's got no power? It's like in the modern world, if you're working for some government bureaucracy, and that bureaucracy can't do anything, you know, you're a committee member, and your committee is powerless. It's like, anyone ever worked for a powerless committee? Have you ever worked on a powerless committee? I have. It's lots of fun. You know, it doesn't matter. You can have your meetings, you discuss things, you come up with plans. It doesn't matter what you do, because nothing's going to fly anyway. Your committee has no, it's just there for decoration. And they'll say, oh, we get the report. Now it's time for the report from such and such committee. Okay. Well, yeah, okay, we're going to have to take this very seriously. And that's that. So Yamaraj's men say, you know, what's the use of, well, practically they're saying, what's the use of working for you if you don't, if you're not really the one with the power? They're inclined to say there's no need to serve such a master. That's Vishwanath's gloss on it. Then they ask, if there are many rulers and dispensing justice and they disagree with one another, then there's going to be a mess. Because either someone will say, yeah, punish him, and somebody will say, no, don't punish him. And then they'll meet in the middle and say, you know, okay, nothing really happens. They like neutralize one another, you know. Somebody says, give him some, you know, it was good. Somebody says it was bad. So then they get together and it was nothing. Or they'll, they won't neutralize each other, and he'll both be rewarded and punished. The guys on the left will punish him, the guys on the right will reward him, and everything will be screwy. Everything will be screwy. You'll have different courts awarding different, you know, imagine you go to court and they award you, yes, you're the right, you're on the winning side, you're entitled to $50,000 from the other party. But then you have to you have to come over here to this other court, and then the judge says, yes, you're the losing side, you have to give the other party $50,000. It's like, what's going on here? So that's what the Yamadutras are saying, that okay, in the material world, you may go to one court and then you appeal to the other court and it goes back and forth. But this is supposed to be absolute justice here. So how are we getting thwarted? How are we getting baffled in this way? That's their question. So now they say, okay, there can be lots of different rulers or lots of different authorities for giving justice. This is text 6. But then there's got to be one person over them. You know, like a Supreme Court, that you go to all the other courts and they say this, that, the other thing. Finally you get to the Supreme Court and that's it. Final word. We thought you were the Supreme Court. Now what? Now what's going on? Seems very puzzling. There should be only one Supreme Judge, not many. And we thought that was you. You're the one who discriminates between pious and you're the Dharmaraj, you're the Yamaraj, you're the controller of all these things. But now we see that it doesn't work. That punishment is ordained under your authority and it's overruled. It's been overruled. These four wonderful people came and just said, nope, can't take them. Nope, you don't know what religion is. We told them what you told us, that it comes from the Vedas, whatever the Vedas say, that's authority. And they just overruled us and said, no, can't take them. So what is going on? Your order has been overruled. That was their submission. They came into the court of Yamaraj and said, whoa, did we ever run into a mess? And we were following your order. We were bringing this super sinful guy. If there's ever anyone sinful, he's definitely, and we've been through it, he's a Brahmin and he ditched his young, beautiful wife from a good family and shacked up with this prostitute and ignored his elderly father and mother who were dependent on him, and he having sex till he's in his 80s, having one kid after another, and his eating the food cooked by this floozy, by this prostitute, and maintaining her and her children by stealing and by dacoitry. So he was, I mean, he's the kind of guy that we're supposed to arrest, and we were arresting him, and then these guys came and cut our ropes. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says if they would like to have brought the Vishnu Dutas before Yamaraj so that Yamaraj could punish the Vishnu Dutas, then okay. You know, you overstepped my men? Okay, well, let me tell you, you're going to get it. Then they'd be satisfied. Then they'd be satisfied. And then finally said, they finished their report. They said, this sinful guy just uttered the name Narayan, and these four beautiful men came and don't worry. So who are these people? And please explain who they are and what happened. Any questions? Okay, these were the questions and they're pretty clear. So when Yamaraj, this is text 11, was questioned by his men, his order carriers, he was very happy because he got to hear the holy name of Narayan and remember the lotus feet of the Lord. It seems from this description that there's not a whole lot of Narayan chanting going on down there in the court of Yamaraj. He deals with all sinful men, and they're not chanting the holy name of the Lord. They're averse to chanting the holy name of the Lord. They have no idea practically about the Lord. So when his order carriers chanted the holy name of Narayan, the Yamaraj was very pleased. It's interesting that Ajamil, just by unintentionally, because his son was named Narayan, so he chanted the holy name of Narayan. And now these Yamadutas, just because they're giving the report, they're also chanting the holy name of Narayan. They're also chanting the holy name. That happened. Who was that? In Gauralila? The constables went out and they were reporting. Who were they reporting to? To the Qazi? To the, you know the story? Someone knows the story? They went out to report on what was going on, and they said that they came back and they reported that there's all these people, these villagers or these Vaishnavas or whatever they are, and they're totally sentimental, and they sing and they dance and they go into ecstasy and they're chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, and dancing and chanting and Krishna Krishna. And the king said, yeah, I understand why they're chanting Hare Krishna, but you're Muslims, why are you chanting Hare Krishna? So similarly, although maybe not so similarly, but yeah, similarly, in the course of their work, they came to give the report, and their report was that this sinful person, as soon as he chanted the holy name of the Lord, these wonderful people came. So Yamaraj was very happy that my men are chanting the holy name of the Lord down here, where we really don't get to hear it. Then there's some philosophy. Now Yamaraj is going to reply. You've accepted me as the Supreme, but it's not a fact. Above me and above all the other demigods, there's the Supreme Master, who's only partially manifested as Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And he's like the two threads, otam protam, the woof and warp, the vertical and horizontal threads of a cloth. And everything is controlled by him, just as a bull is controlled by a rope in its nose. So he once said, no, I'm not the top man, I'm not the supreme authority here. They're chanting Hare Krishna. Some social, maybe it's a marriage or something, some social occasion is going on over there. Yeah, it really sounds like it's a Sankirtan Mela or something. So what other incident does this recall? So they go to Yamaraj, he says, yeah, you thought I was supreme, but I'm not supreme. Where else do we find this? Don't know. Someone knows? Where else do we find this? You're on 6th canto. Does that mean you've gone through the previous cantos? Yeah, that's at least relevant. But there's a closer parallel incident. It's in the 2nd canto. Who's read 2nd canto? Once upon a time we did. No one remembers. Nard Muni? Nope. Not going to jog anything. Nard Muni approaches Lord Brahma and says that we see that we thought that you were the supreme controller of the universe, but now we see that you're meditating on someone. So, who are you meditating on? If you're not supreme, does it mean there's someone supreme over you, or what's going on? And Lord Brahma was immediately pleased by the question. He said, yes, I'm not supreme. You think that everything's in my grip the way a walnut is held in someone's hand, but actually everything is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the characteristic of a devotee. He at once corrects anyone who thinks, oh, you must be God, you must be the supreme controller, we thought you were the... No. That I'm just the servant of the supreme personality of Godhead. So that's a demigod. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Panam Sada Pashyanti Suraya Vishnu Bhakta Smita Daiva Asurastad Vipayaya. The godly persons are always in the devotional service of the Lord. So, now do you remember that incident? Yeah? No one looks too... Oh, definitely I remember about it. Did you study Second Canto? You did, and it went right by. How about that? Well, I'll send a memo to Atul and you can all repeat the course. Anyway, you have left something to look forward to when you read Second Canto again. So Yamaraj is saying, yes, I'm not supreme. Everything is controlled by Krishna. And... as a bullock cart driver ties ropes through the nostrils of the bulls to control them, the Lord controls everyone, all the human beings, through the ropes of His words in the Vedas, which set forth the names and activities of the different orders of human society. So, in other words, if you're in... why do I have to do all the... In other words, what's that mean? What's the purport of that? He controls everyone through the names and activities of the different orders. Four different orders. Yeah. So how does Varnashram represent his control?
Because Varnashram is supposed to lead one to the service of Lord Vishnu.
Yeah. But how does that amount to control?
Honored properly, then it's like a little chaotic. So that's how everyone's kind of controlled by being in their vana and ashram, in their proper duties.
Yeah, they're prescribed duties that you're given the name. Okay, you're a Brahmin, you're a Kshatriya, you're a Vaishya, you're a Shudra. You're given certain activities now. Okay, you got to do the Brahmin work, you got to do the Kshatriya work. Where's that work coming from? It's coming from the Lord. So he's got his rules in the Vedas. If you're a Brahmin, you got to do this. If you're a Kshatriya, you got to do that. If you're a Vaishya, you got to do this. If you're a Shudra, you got to do that. If you're a woman, you got to do this. If you're a something else, you got to do that. Everybody gets a set of prescribed duties, and in that way, everyone's under control. That's the idea. Everyone's expected to engage in the service of the Lord that way. Then, there's some, in the next couple of verses, there's an expression of inability to understand the Supreme Personality of God. I'm at text 14, in case you were wondering where I was. And there's a big long list of demigods and sages. And the Yamaraj says, really, none of us understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though we're freed from passion and ignorance, still we can't understand the activities of the Lord. And what then to speak of others who are under the influence of the illusory energy and simply rely on their own mental speculation. The idea is that if one wants to understand Krishna, one has to come to the transcendental platform. Nistraguna Bhavarjana. On the spiritual platform, then one can understand Krishna. as long as one is still bewildered by passion and ignorance, or even still conditioned by goodness, one can't properly understand the personality of Godhead. One has to come to the spiritual platform, which is the platform of devotional service. That's clear enough? Okay, then there's a really good example. I really like this example about the eyes and the different limbs of the body. Has everyone read this? You're all on it? Okay. Someone kindly explain that example? The eyes and the limbs. Everyone's in earnest competition to be the first to explain this example. Okay, give it a shot.
When he said that different limbs of the body, like especially knowledge acquiring senses, they get attracted to these sense objects. But the sense objects, they don't have eyes, otherwise they would have been attracted to the senses. And similarly, the supposedly sitting in the heart of every living entity, the soul, we cannot perceive the presence of the super soul, but still he has to follow the dictation of the super soul because everything knowledge and remembrance is coming from him.
Yeah, you're pretty close. Some of the details of the analogy are not quite lined up. There's maybe a little bit extra there that doesn't need to be there. A little bit more that maybe should be there. First of all, you've got the right comparison, that the eyes are compared to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the living entities are compared to the limbs of the body. So that's the comparison. Then how are the eyes like the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Yes.
They can see and know everything.
They can see and know everything. They can see and know everything. Your eyes can see. What can your sense of touch see? What can your nose see? What can your ears see? What can your mouth see? Your sense of touch, what can it see? But the eyes can see. They can see everything. And what else about the eyes? They can see, and therefore what? They give direction. You know, we're hungry, and there's food over there. We're, you know, we want this or that, and there it is. Turn right, turn left, and go full speed ahead. The eyes give direction to all the senses what to do. Hand, there's some food over there, and I want you to go down. And it's kind of a 45-degree angle, and you'll see there's a gulab jamun there, and get down there and pick it up, and you can throw it in the mouth. So the eyes give direction. When there's no light, then we have a hard time. All the rest of the senses have a hard time getting their work done because there's no eyes to direct them. We want to touch something, but we don't know where to go to touch it. We want to hear something, but we can't find our MP3 player because we can't see. We want to eat something, but where is it? So we need the eyes to give direction. So the eyes are like the Lord because they see everything and they direct. And how are the living entities like the other senses? It's a real revved up day today, gang. How are the eyes like the other senses? The living entities like the other senses. Yeah, they have to work under the direction of the Lord. And what else? They can't see. That was easy enough, wasn't it? Yeah, they can't see. Living entities really can't see the Lord. That's the specific thing. This business about, you know, they're attracted to the sense of, that was extra. You didn't need that. But the eyes can see the other senses, but the other senses can't see the eyes. The eyes are there, and they can see the hands, they can see the legs, they can see everything. But your hands and legs can't see your eyes. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what is that? Yeah, that's also true. That's also true. We were just hearing that the eyes can see all the senses, but the senses can't see the eyes. In Bhagavad Gita. The eyes can't see, the eyes can see all the other senses, but the other senses can't see the eyes. Navadwari Pure Dehi. No? This is an analogy, the parts have to match. Senses can't see the eyes, but the eyes can see the senses.
Where the soul dictates the form of the body, the next body has to know.
You're so far away. You're not even warm. Oh, former Bhakti Shastri students. Senses can't see the eyes, but the eyes can see all the other senses.
There's an analogy given in the Bhagavad Gita, as far as I remember, where the soul smells desire. It's like a Prabhupada says, like you smell the scent of a flower.
15th chapter.
The person in the heart smells the desire of the living entity.
Great.
Is that it?
Nope. Nope, it's not the introverted tortoise. Oh, come on. You're giving up. How about Vedaham Sarvabhutani? Don't know that verse. Vartamanani Charjana? Ah, what's the meaning?
Vedaham Sarvabhutani. I know Veda, knowledge. Aham Sarvabhutani. Vartamanani Charjana. Vartamanani Charjana. And I also know past and the future, and Imam Sudhedana Prasana, but nobody knows me.
Yes. I know past, present, and future, Bhavishyani Chabhutani, of all living beings, but they don't know me. Does that match? I know all the living beings. I know all about their past, present, and future. But hardly anyone knows me. Mom, tu veda, and kashchana. Nobody really knows me. Huh? That matches. Okay. So that's the idea here. That Krishna knows everyone, but no one knows Krishna. It doesn't mean that there's no that Krishna's not there, but everybody's like the blind senses that can't see the eyes that are giving them direction. Very nice example here in Bhagavad Gita. And good, you all have to come back and take the Bhakti Shastri course again. Yes.
I have a question. Yamaraj is one of the 12 Mahajans.
Mm.
A devotee of the Lord, so his associates are serving him.
Mm.
He's their master.
Mm.
He's a devotee.
Mm.
But it seems like they got quite a heavy task. What kind of devotee ends up being a Yamadita? Serving like that.
What kind of karma do you have to be a Yamadita? Good question. I really don't know. Maybe you were a prison guard in your past life, you know? Those guys develop that sort of heavy mentality. Guys who wear, well, glasses like these, you know, who wear police glasses and carrying clubs around and just waiting for a prisoner to get out of line and they can beat the living daylights out of them.
But there's some kind of devotees to some degree, in the sense that they're serving Yamaraj.
Yeah, they're serving Yamaraj, so they're not ordinary men. I don't know what kind of karma you could apply, you know. I mean, maybe you know, they come from one of those third world countries where it's real hard to get a job, and they tried to get to America and they couldn't get to America, so they wound up having to go to some Yamini or wherever it is and work for Yamaraj. Well, you gotta work somewhere. I don't know. I don't know how they wind up working for Yamaraj. Tough job market. Interesting karma, you wonder. But you get that here on Earth too, that some people get the karma that they wind up being prison guards, they wind up being these guys at Guantanamo who, you know, do all these nasty things to the prisoners. And of course they're not so fortunate that they're following the pious orders of the agent of Krishna. They're indirectly serving by serving some demoniac government. But somehow the karma is there that they become Yama's dutas. Anything else? Okay.
But it is your karma, whatever, what work you do.
Yeah, it's your karma.
They are unfortunate to be the jailer.
Well, it's fortunate also that they're working for Yamaraj. They could be working for the United States government. It'd be a lot worse. The Yamadutas actually dispense justice. Not just that there's some propaganda agency saying how this is all justified. It's actually justified. Although they were overruled in this rare instance by the Vishnu Dutas, actually, what they told the Vishnu Dutas was right. Dharma veda pranihito dharma. That dharma is ascertained by the Vedas. And we're just carrying out the punishment ordained according to Yamaraj for those who transgress the Vedic principles. So they're actually dispensing justice. Yamaraj, although he has a thankless task, is carrying out the orders of the Supreme Lord. Okay. Then Yamaraj further describes the Lord. He's Atmatantra. He's self-sufficient and fully independent. He's the master of everyone, and everything is under his control, including the illusory energy. He has his form and qualities and features, and he has his order carriers, as I have my order carriers, you guys. So he has his order carriers, the Vaishnavas, who are almost like him in their transcendental nature and qualities, and who also move about the world with full independence. The Vishnudutas are very beautiful. The Yamadutas are described earlier as being twisted and contorted and grotesque looking. But the Vishnudutas are very beautiful in their bodily features. And they're powerful, practically like Lord Vishnu himself. Bhutani Vishno Surapujitani Durdarshalingani Mahabhutani Rakshanti Tad Bhakti Mata Parebhyo Mattascha Martyanata Sarvatascha. The Vishnu Dutas have wonderful bodily features, almost like those of Vishnu himself, and they protect the devotees from enemies, from envious persons, and even from my jurisdiction, and what to speak of natural disturbances. Prabhupada comments here that sometimes the ISKCON devotees are afraid of an impending world war and the danger of that, and they ask what would happen to them if a war were to occur. And Prabhupada said they should just be confident that Krishna will protect them. Any questions? I have a question. What does that mean, that Krishna will protect the devotees? What does that mean in practical terms? Loud, loud. We're always serving him, chanting. And how are they protected? Yeah, protects them with the conch and the lotus.
Protects their Krishna consciousness.
Protects their Krishna consciousness. Yeah, it's a question. I asked the question because does it mean that a devotee will never he'll be like invincible? No one could shoot him. No one could rob him. No one could punch him out. No one could do anything. No one can lock him up. No misfortune will occur to him because Lord Vishnu will protect him. I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just wondering because it seems to say that. It says he'll be free from natural disturbances. He'll be free from Yamadutas. What does it say he'll be free from? Enemies, envious persons, and even from Yamaraj, what to speak of natural disturbances. Does it work?
I think the ultimate protection is the protection of your
consciousness, Krishna consciousness.
Krishna consciousness is always protected. Mm-hmm.
They say that if Krishna wants to protect you, then no one can harm you. But whenever he's ready to withdraw the protection and take you, then that's your time. So then you'll go, but you won't lose. You won't be unprotected even in that state.
As long as he wants to protect you, you'll be protected. When it's time to go, you're dispatched.
Still protected, but you're just taken back to him.
Okay.
Isn't it that if materially we can be hurt, maybe we are sure.
It sometimes appears that way, doesn't it?
And only the soul is saved. So when our time is gone, it's like,
okay.
We will have to go, even if it is meant by a war or a disaster or whatever, it will happen, and Krishna will only save, I agree, our soul.
Only the soul will be saved. Yes.
Krishna's taking shelter of Krishna means taking shelter of his name, qualities and pastimes.
Mm.
So devotee is when they fix their attention, their mind, into his name, home, qualities and pastimes, they get some sort of relishment out of that.
Mm.
The happiness that get out of being absorbed in thinking of Krishna's name, home, pastimes and qualities there, they cannot experience these threefold miseries they are experienced, they are being afflicted. So that's how they are being protected by Krishna. Then we can see Krishna, he is coming to this world and he is living in past time for who? For the devotees, so that they can meditate upon and forget about the threefold miseries. Because as long as we are here, we cannot avoid those miseries. They will be completely afflicting us. So that's the only way we can see protection.
We have to be beyond the threefold miseries.
No, we don't have to try to come beyond the mode of threefold miseries, but we can just simply divert our attention to these three things, four things.
And then we'll be beyond those. Okay. Yes?
There will always be tests.
Loud.
There will always be tests from Krishna. So we always have to remember him behind everything.
And then, what happens?
Then we are protected.
What does that mean?
Whatever happens, it's Krishna's desire, so what can I do?
Okay, it's Krishna's desire, whatever happens.
Krishna?
Yes?
Could it be, isn't it like, suppose at all an airplane is crashing somewhere, but it seems in life that sometimes people just, I had to fly at 4 o'clock, something happened, I break my leg or something. I couldn't go to the airport.
Right.
So I was not in the airplane. Could it be that Krishna, God works like this, there's something is not meant for you, he will take care that you will not be there at the moment.
So it's always, when the plane's going to crash, Krishna cancels the reservations of the devotees.
Before I know that it's going to crash, something happened that I will not be in the plane or on the
Is that consistently what happens? That Krishna checks the passenger list to make sure there are no devotees on the flight, and then he crashes the plane.
But I can imagine in this way he protects. Did he take care that the ones who are not meant to go yet? He takes care, especially with the devotees, that they are not there at that moment. Something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Doesn't that amount to something like he protects you from death until you die?
Until you die.
Yes.
Something like, because like we were saying yesterday, that the biggest test is at the moment of death.
Mm-hmm.
This is very dangerous. So Krishna is protecting us by being like this threefold misery, just to prepare us for that moment so that we can remember him.
Uh-huh.
If we can't remember him now in these circumstances, we will not remember him.
You get some measure of misfortune. You know that story about the king and his advisor? who, what was, do you know that?
Saw Krishna's mercy, loses his finger.
Yeah. You know the
sacrifice?
Yeah, but do you remember the details of that story? How it goes?
They were looking for someone without him. No,
because the king was hunting.
Yes.
And he got wounded or cut or something.
Yes.
And his advisor said, it's
Krishna's
mercy. And then they
said, go to jail. Get out of here, you asshole. Put him in jail. And then he gets captured by some rogues who want to offer him to Bali.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then they realize his thumb's cut. It's a defect. And then he goes back to the kingdom and thanks the minister that it was Krishna's mercy. And then the minister says, no, it was Krishna's mercy you put me in jail, because if I was with you, they would have been. As far as I remember the drama.
Yeah, it goes something like that.
Also a story like a man with accident. They needed only a perfect man. Perfect person. No disabilities, and because of something happened.
That's the story he just told. Same story. Okay. You know what's going to happen now? Yes, we shall break. And we shall see you shortly. Satkritosmi.